This is Cincinnati Edition. I'm Mark Caney. On today's show, a look at the future of U.S.-Korea relations. But first, Native Americans constructed vast earthworks stretching for miles through Ohio. Some of these geometric and animal-shaped structures were more than 15 feet high and rivaled Stonehenge in their astronomical accuracy. Many of these structures have been demolished, but there are still some spectacular sites remaining. Now, a local group's working to gain World Heritage Site recognition from the United Nations for some of Ohio's earthworks, such as Fort Ancient and Serpent Mound. Here to discuss the effort are Ohio History Connection Curator of Archaeology, Dr. Brad Lepper, and Fort Ancient Earthworks and Nature Preserve Site Manager Jack Blosser. And you can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Brad and Jack, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you for the opportunity.
My pleasure.
Brad, start out by telling us, what were the earthworks? So why did the Native Americans build these structures?
Well, the earthworks were built by a variety of different American Indian cultures over the ages for different purposes. Some of the earliest earthworks were simply mounds of earth used as cemeteries, burial mounds. Also, they began to build enclosures, walls of earth that weren't used for burial, but that were used to outline the perimeter of some kind of structure. And most of the ones that we're talking about are going to be ceremonial. They're like community churches for the smaller ones, and some of the larger ones were gigantic cathedrals that hundreds or thousands of people may have gathered in for various kinds of ceremonies. And then later, perhaps later, there were these animal-shaped mounds built by different cultures that seemed to be shrines to these animal spirits.
Jack, do we know how many groups, how many different tribes were involved in creating these structures?
No, basically any American Indian that was living in the Ohio Valley area 2,000 years ago. There's been DNA studies done of a mound in Chillicothe that was excavated well over 100 years ago. And there was a lady to be able to extract DNA from 36 of these individuals. And they found that the individuals would have been the Sioux, the Apache, the Kickapoo, the Yakima are in Washington State today, and then also the Chippewa Ojibwe from Ontario. So basically, any Native person that was in the Ohio Valley who have since moved on to other geographic locations would have been considered the people during the Hopewell culture.
Brad, how many of these structures existed in Ohio initially a couple thousand years ago?
Yeah, that's difficult to know, but there's estimates that something like 6,000 to 8,000 mounds and earthen enclosures existed in Ohio before Europeans came in with agriculture and people looted mounds and so on that destroyed many of them. But now there may be perhaps as many as 1,000, and of those, perhaps only about 500 or 600 are protected, preserved, or essentially undamaged. And that number is probably even less than that.
You know, a lot of these were demolished by settlers when they were moving in. Did they know what they were dealing with, Jack, or did they just think this was a big pile of dirt they were looking at?
Well, Brad can answer that a little bit better. He's done a little more research. But when the Europeans came, they saw these mounds, and they had no idea. In fact, Thomas Jefferson, I guess, was one of the first people who systematically excavated a mound on his estate.
Brad, did you want to add on to that?
Yeah, I think Jack's exactly right, that some people had absolutely no idea what they were doing when they were plowing them over. Some people knew they were Indian mounds but didn't care anything about the Indians, so they didn't care anything about the mounds. And some people actually systematically looted mounds to get artifacts out from them that they could put on display or buy and sell.
Jack, now, was Fort Ancient actually a fort, or what was the purpose that was built for?
That's the number one incorrect answer. Fort Ancient was not a fortress at all. And I remember, 2 + 2 is always going to be 4, but the science and the techniques of archaeology change according to the technologies that we have. So early on, the early archaeologist had thought that it might have been a fortress. Caleb Atwater in 1820 had thought, well, this might not be a fortress, but maybe a place for prehistoric Olympiad running and sporting events. And then he did say that he thought maybe it could have been used as a place of defense to ward off against mastodon attacks. So it wasn't until the 1930s that the 1920s, 1930s, that they started to figure out that the Hopewell cultural people who built this site used it as a place to gather for ceremonial, religious, special, social events throughout the year.
Brad, how much archaeological work is still going on at the remaining sites?
Actually, they're very active sites for research. It's a different kind of research than what Thomas Jefferson did in terms of digging burial mounds or something like that. A lot of the research now is directed at using remote sensing, geophysical techniques like magnetometry and ground-penetrating radar that kind of see beneath the ground without disturbing it. But absolutely, Fort Ancient has been receiving work with Dr. Robert Reardon from Wright State University, now retired. He is actually excavating one of these amazing features that was discovered using remote sensing, but that kind of study can now be specifically targeted at particular features rather than just simply haphazardly digging and hoping you'll find something. So yeah, and a lot of this new research is revolutionizing what we know about these ancient mound-building cultures.
Yeah, what kind of artifacts have been discovered that are giving us new insights into the Native Americans who built these?
Well, with regard to the Moorhead Circle, certainly Jack at Fort Ancient might be able to speak better to this, but it's not so much the artifacts, although they are sort of keys to interpreting particular features, but it's the features themselves, the post holes that are showing that this was a concentric series of three circles of posts. A central feature that seems to have been a basin filled with a big mound of bright red clay that perhaps was some kind of altar, and there was broken bits of pottery around that may have been offerings from a feast or something. But Jack could probably say more about the Moorhead Circle in particular.
Yeah, Jack?
Yeah, it's a 200-foot diameter circle with an actual gateway or opening that is 12 degrees from south. Every one of these posts could have been buried between 3 and 4 feet into the ground, leaving an elevational support of an actual post out of the ground between 11 and 13 feet. Many of these posts were filled. Once you have that hole dug, you put in a post. Now you fill it with chinking rock. And many of these posts were lined with over 200 pounds of limestone. So they've calculated 200-plus posts supported with about 25 tons of limestone brought up from the valley. They've also, as Brad said, unearthed a red-stained soil that is 14 feet by 16 feet in size with a trough around it, or a slip trench, with over 2,000 pieces of pottery that were broken and placed in that, possibly as an offering of some type. And next to that is a structure that, if I'm not mistaken, could be approaching close to 45 feet in length, that Dr. Bob Reardon is still trying to interpret that.
Brad, you live close to the Newark Octagon, don't you?
Yes, I actually live in Newark, and my first job with the Ohio History Connection was being the curator for the Newark Earthworks as well as Flint Ridge.
Yeah, that's got an interesting background to it because it's tracking, what, the motions of the moon, the movement of the moon?
Yeah, the circle and the octagon particularly, that's the octagon earthworks component of the Newark earthworks, is lined up, the main axis of the site is lined up to the northernmost rise of the moon, but there are actually four rise points and four set points that track the 18.6 year-long cycle of the moon, and alignments to all of those points on the horizon are built into the octagon earthworks. Some might consider that makes that structure an astronomical observatory, but I think instead that those alignments are intended to make a direct connection with the cosmic dance up in the heavens and make the octagon more sacred because it is sort of locked into those cosmic rhythms.
How does it compare to Stonehenge? I've heard people make that comparison to Brad.
Yeah, it's much, much, much bigger than Stonehenge. Stonehenge would barely, occupy one of the corners of the octagon, but it's a gigantic monument. In the case of Newark, it's made of earth. The octagon, of course, are made out of these giant pillars of stone. But I think they're fundamentally very similar as being the focus of the ceremonial lives of the people in England for Stonehenge and in central Ohio for the Newark earthworks.
And Jack, could you tell us a little more about Fort Ancient? You can give us a little bit more of a description of what it looks like.
It is the largest and best preserved hilltop enclosure in the entire United States. We have 18,000 feet of earth walls, 3.5 miles.
Wow.
They were built sometime between 100 BC and AD 290, 390-year period of time. So we've estimated at a minimum of 19 generations to build this site. If you ever think of a dog bone, we're big at the top and little in the middle and big at the end. We have 67 openings or gateways. We had at one time 131 ponding areas. So you could understand why some of the early archaeologists had misinterpreted it as a place of war, a fort. When the archaeologists excavated the site, they said, well, who built it? Well, it must have been a fort built by ancient people. And so they said, let's call it the Ancient Fortification. Then later it turned to Fort Ancient. But we are definitely not. In fact, there's three reasons why we're not a military outpost. One is the immense size of this site. As Brad said, if you have a place to gather, you could have several hundred to 1,000 or so people. Military folks said it's going to take 5,000 to properly defend, so then you have to have more to attack. That's strike one. Strike two would be the interior ditch system, 131 ponding areas that at one time would have retained water. Some of them are lined with clay. And the early archaeologists had misinterpreted as an interior moat system. So I've never seen a castle with a moat on the inside. And then strike three, we have the 67 gateways. There's no evidence of a fence or a stockade to keep people in or out. In fact, we've got 23 entrances paved in limestone.
And Brad, who owns these sites nowadays? And do any of the Native American groups, do they still have any say in how these sites are managed?
Yeah, that's a great question. The Fort Ancient site and the Newark Earthworks are owned by the Ohio History Connection, and the other component of the Hopewell Ceremonial Earthworks nomination that we're hoping to get listed as a World Heritage Site is owned by the National Park Service. And both the Ohio History Connection and the National Park Service are actively involved in consultation with the American Indian tribes that were associated with the Ohio Valley, both in terms of how we interpret the sites, as well as, by federal requirements, what we do with some of the funerary remains, the human remains, the funerary objects, and so on, that are related to these sites as well.
And these are these found all over the country, or is our area unique for the number and scope of these mounds that we have?
Our area is definitely unique for the number and scope and the particular kinds of mounds. These kinds of gigantic enclosures, whether they're geometric enclosures as at Newark or hilltop enclosures at Fort Ancient, the scale and diversity of these is definitely the most here in central Ohio. But there are other places like Cahokia in Illinois, a later culture that built this gigantic pyramid with a flat top. It's called Monk's Mound. We have nothing like that in Ohio. So it depends on what kind of mound you're talking about, what culture, what American Indian culture, but Ohio is definitely, you know, the center of this Hopewell culture that built these monumental enclosures.
We will continue our conversations about Ohio's earthworks, and you can join us, 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. My guests this afternoon are Ohio History Connection Curator of Archaeology, Dr. Brad Lepper, and Fort Ancient Earthworks and Nature Preserve Site Manager, Jack Blosser. You can join us, 513-419-7100. You can email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Brad, I wanted you to talk some about Native American earthwork that is in our area. It's out in Adams County, and that's the Serpent Mound.
Yes, Serpent Mound is the largest animal effigy mound ever built in the world. It's more than 1,400 feet long from the tip of its nose to the tip of its tail, if you stretched it out and, you know, measured it all as a single length. And it is, I think, the most artistically elegant and beautiful of all the effigy mounds. Some of the effigy mounds in the upper Midwest are more amorphous. Sometimes you can't tell, is it a wolf or is it a bear? Some of the birds in the upper Midwest, the Effigy Mounds National Monument, are quite elegant and beautiful. But Serpent Mound is, I think, a spectacular site. There is controversy. There's debate in the archaeological community about how old it is. Some people think it was built by the Adena culture, perhaps as early as 300 B.C., and some people think it was built by the Fort Ancient culture, not the people that built the Fort Ancient earthworks, which were the Hopewell people, but the same people that lived at Fort Ancient 1,000 years after the Hopewell earthworks were built, which archaeologists gave the confusing name of the Fort Ancient culture. So that's around 1,000 A.D. So I don't think that debate is resolved yet, but it's a fascinating example, I guess, of the fact that there are still lots of questions to be answered and that we're still learning from these places.
So we don't know how long ago. Do we have any idea how long it might have taken to build something like that?
Well, that's a hard question, and I actually get asked that question a lot, and it sort of depends if the size of the group that was there, how long they worked a week. But undoubtedly, they were limited to working during the spring, fall, summer area when the earth wasn't frozen and they could dig it up and there was abundant food to eat. But I think Serpent Mound, depending on, again, how many people were actually there working, could have been built within a few seasons, or it might have been built and sort of revised, because we know this is one of those more remote sensing discoveries that was made recently. There are three main curves to the body. But we've discovered, or the remote sensing investigations by Dr. Jared Burks discovered, that there was a fourth curve of the body, that now there is no trace of it. But at some point in the history of that mound, either they built the base of this curve and decided not to build it, or it had a fourth curve and was removed at some point in its history. So some of these mounds were added on to from generation to generation, so it wasn't simply a matter of how long will it take us to build this mound.
513-419-7100. If you'd like to join our conversation, let's talk to Doug. Hi, Doug. Hi, Doug. Go right ahead.
Yes, you know, certainly everyone's aware of Serpent Mound and Fort Ancient and the sites in Chillicothe. I was wondering if you guys were familiar with the Turner Works in Anderson Township, as it's, certainly more close to Cincinnati. Thank you.
Yeah, Brad, go ahead.
Yeah, the Turner Earthworks were some another spectacular Hopewell Center of Geometric Earthworks, studied by folks from the Peabody Museum, Frederick Ward Putnam, and some a local group as well. And it is one of the most important Hopewell centers in southern Ohio, but unfortunately there's very little that's preserved, so there's not much to go see today. But absolutely, it was a very important Hopewell center and one that's contributed a lot to our understanding of the culture.
So, Brad, what is World Heritage status, and how would that benefit the earthworks that are applying for this?
Well, the World Heritage status is something that the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, or UNESCO, gives to sites that deserve it, that are considered to be not just important to a local state or not just important to a particular nation, but important to the world. Things like Stonehenge, sites like the Great Wall of China, that the significance transcends any kind of local, politics or local nationalism. They're important to the world. And we do have, the United States has a few World Heritage sites like Cahokia, which I mentioned earlier in Illinois, and sites like Poverty Point, which is another mound site in Louisiana. But we believe that these Hopewell ceremonial earthworks also deserve to be recognized as World Heritage sites. And if we get that designation, if these sites are inscribed on the World Heritage List, it'll do at least two things. And the one, and for me this is the most important, it will tell everybody around the world that the ancient American Indian heritage of the Central Ohio Valley is every bit as magnificent and spectacular and significant as any significant cultural site around the world. So we'll get a better, I think the world will get a better appreciation of the American Indian achievement 2,000 years ago in the Ohio Valley. The second thing it will do for particularly local communities around these sites is produce an influx of what's called heritage tourism, tourists that want to come and see World Heritage sites and will spend a lot of money doing so. And this can be a tremendous boost to local economies for places that have World Heritage sites in particular adjacent to them.
Yeah, they've estimated for the state of Ohio it would be $20 million in wages and over $80 million in spending. If we have a 10-fold increase in visitation at Fort Ancient, our attendance will go from 26,000 to over 250,000. So that's going to be a huge economic impact. One of the other things that Brad talks about a lot is also the outstanding universal value. And he mentioned it a little bit about the cultural significance so exceptional that it transcends national boundaries. And the outstanding cultural universal that we see with these Hopewell ceremonial earthworks is that it bears an exceptional testimony of a civilization that's disappeared. These mounds were built by people who did not have complex agriculture, but complex horticulture. They did not have beans. They did not have beans or corn. But there's also no evidence of social hierarchy, no evidence of warfare, no evidence of enslavement, and they had the ability to trade across most of what is now called the United States. And yet all of these monuments of earth are unparalleled anywhere else in the world. So people were doing this not out of conviction, but out of possibly spirituality, the religious fervor, requiring at Fort Ancient 19 generations of people handing down this religious ceremonial tradition.
Brian joins us now. Hi, Brian.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah, sure can.
Sure. Okay, I have a question. I heard before that the Serpent Mound earthworks are built on the uplift of an ancient meteor impact site. Do you know if that's correct? And if it is, do you think the ancient people would have had any way of knowing that, and would that give any additional significance?
Brad? Yeah, I can answer that. This is Brad. It is indeed built on sort of the inner portion of what's a much larger meteor impact crater. But that meteor impact occurred hundreds of millions of years ago. So the people living there wouldn't have seen it happen. It wouldn't have happened in their lifetimes. And it's such an ancient geological feature that there wouldn't have been anything particularly obvious about it that would have let them conclude that it was a meteor impact crater. But even so, the geology, the rocks were all jumbled up in this area. And the cliff on which Serpent Mound is built, to some people's imaginations, including mine, by the way, actually looks like, at the end of this cliff, it looks like a big stone serpent's head. So I think the one of the reasons Serpent Mound is built where it's built is not necessarily because the people knew it was a meteor impact crater, but because the rock there, jumbled up by that impact millions of years ago, actually left a feature that looks like a stone serpent, a giant stone serpent sort of emerging from the earth. And I think Serpent Mound was a kind of a response to that. Perhaps they built a shrine on top of that cliff as a tribute to the serpent spirit, which they felt they could actually see emerging from the earth in that location.
Janelle sent us a question. She wanted to know how many of these mounds fall along the world ley lines. And I guess ley lines, they're talking about the lines of spiritual energy. Has anybody ever looked into that, Brad?
Yeah, people have looked into that, but I don't think there's any real credibility in that theory. When you draw straight lines, you can often intersect a number of sites, but I don't know of any way to measure that energy, to test it scientifically, to see if it really exists, or if it's simply a matter of drawing lines to connect sites and attributing significance to that, the fact that they occur in that same line, that really isn't all that significant. It could just be a coincidence.
So what is the process for attaining World Heritage status? How's that work?
Well, we, the United States, that is government, put sites on a tentative list. So local groups like the Ohio History Connection and the National Park Service here in Ohio could nominate to the Department of the Interior sites like ours that we think should be World Heritage sites. The Department of the Interior evaluates them, and if they think they're significant and worthy, they put them on the United States tentative list. And that's an odd name. It probably should be just the short list. And that's a list of 15 or 20 sites from which, over the next decade, the United States government, the Department of the Interior, will pick. We can nominate as many as two a year, one cultural site and one natural site, although the United States hasn't nominated two a year in a long time. Typically, we'll nominate one. So hopefully, we'll be one of the next sites, perhaps the next site, that the United States Department of the Interior selects to move forward. And then that nomination is sent to the UNESCO headquarters in Paris, and then that begins the evaluation process. They'll send experts here to the site to do on-the-site evaluations, and people we've had that are associated with that process come and look at our sites. They fully agree that these should be World Heritage Sites. We knock their socks off with these sites. They're so spectacular and such grandeur at these sites. And the scientific, the astronomical information and the geometrical information that's encoded in them that shows that these people had a sophisticated knowledge, even though the technology that they used to build them was so simple. And by simple, I mean pointed sticks and baskets. But you can be sort of misled by that simplicity of the technology into thinking that they're just piles of dirt. But nothing could be further from the truth. They are mounds of carefully emplaced earth, engineered to have survived for more than 2,000 years, and they encode, as I've said, these principles of astronomy and geometry that are every bit as sophisticated as what the Greeks and Romans were doing.
Yeah, that's the thing that amazes me, Jack and Brad, is that these were built thousands of years ago. And yet they're still here today. I'm just astounded by that.
Yeah, it's amazing that when you come to Fort Ancient, the tallest of the earth walls are 23 feet. In 1809, they were recorded at 27 feet. So we've extrapolated back 2,000 years, and portions of our earth walls could have reached 32 to 36 feet in height. And also at Fort Ancient, when Brad talked about the lunar alignments at the octagon, Fort Ancient has a summer solstice and a winter solstice, and we also have two lunar alignments as well. So our December 21st, we're going to open up the site at 7:30 in the morning, and everybody is welcome to come, and they can watch the same sunrise that occurred over 2,000 years ago.
Jack, I have to ask you, did you watch the eclipse from the Fort Ancient yesterday?
Yes, I did.
Did you?
It was awesome. We had about seven cars out front, and they were setting out things and cameras, and yeah, it was pretty nice. But I was surprised that even at 93%, that the sun was still pretty bright out there.
So, how long will this take, Brad, to get a yes or no on this World Heritage status? It sounds like it's kind of a long-term process, actually.
It has been a long-term process, but we think we're right on the verge of the United States moving our nomination forward. And once they do, it's basically a year-long, it'll take a year for UNESCO to evaluate it, and they can come back with one of three decisions. They can defer the nomination and say, well, there's just not enough to support it. Maybe you could come back another year with better information. Or they can say, no, we've decided that these sites don't deserve World Heritage inscription, in which case you're done. Or, and we believe by far this is the most likely alternative, is they'll say, absolutely, these sites deserve to be inscribed on the World Heritage List, and then there will be a ceremony in Paris or wherever to have these sites inscribed on the list. But we think we've completed, we've been working on this for 10 years or more now, mm-hmm. but we think the stars are lined up. We've done the hard work. we're ready to go forward.
So you are getting close, you think, to that final answer?
We hope so. We just need to get the Department of the Interior excited about this nomination and move it forward.
Fort Ancient is also trying to achieve this status. You're on that list, aren't you?
Yes, yeah. We are.
Yeah.
And like Brad said, it's been a 10-year process. And we've hired Meisner & Associates to help us with the group. We've also started a historic site management plan for interpretation and general site use. Because one of the things that when we reach World Heritage status, how are we going to maintain the site's peacefulness and tranquility with the 200,000 people visiting? So one of the things that we're working on is trying to provide an experience to the guests when they come that's not going to take away from the noise or people that's around it. So we've got a little bit of work to do yet, but we've got some really good plans underway.
How many sites total are applying for this? Do we know?
It's seven sites.
Seven sites altogether?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Jack and Brad, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity.
Ohio History Connection Curator of Archaeology, Dr. Brad Lepper, and Fort Ancient Earthworks and Nature Preserve Site Manager, Jack Blosser. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.